willing to talk, to acknowledge sexual diversity, to acknowledge sexuality per se, then it's going to be a tremendous obstacle.
Say amen, somebody.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Turkey's family values set the stage for queer oppression. More U.S.-based corporations dump workplace diversity programs. And filmmaker Riggs and healer Lakaya speak truth to power. Those stories and more this week, now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Marcos Najera.
And I'm Sarah Montague.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending January 18th, 2025. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is declaring 2025 the Year of the Family. Regurgitating familiar homophobic rhetoric, Erdogan claims that the struggle for LGBTQ equality is part of a foreign conspiracy to undermine Turkish values. In his words, "It is our common responsibility to protect our children and youth from harmful trends and perverse ideologies. Neoliberal cultural trends are crossing borders and penetrating all corners of the world. They also lead to LGBT and other movements gaining ground." Erdogan says that what he calls gender neutralization policies are a battering ram against the traditional family. Taking the victim stance, the president complains, "Anyone who defends nature and the family is subject to heavy oppression." Erdogan announced the new initiative during a speech in the capital city of Ankara on January 13th. The plan is to reverse declining birth rates and offers financial incentives to young families to have several children. LGBTQ pride celebrations have been banned in Turkey since Erdogan gained power in 2014. Riot police in major Turkish cities like Ankara and Istanbul have used tear gas and rubber bullets to make arrests and disperse crowds attempting to celebrate queer culture.
More U.S.-based transnational companies are obeying in advance imperatives to restrict or totally abandon workplace diversity programs, while others are bucking that trend. Nissan Motors, McDonald's, Amazon, and Meta are joining about a dozen other major corporations that have bowed to conservative pressure so far in the new year. Right-wing rabble-rouser Robbie Starbuck is taking credit for the shifts after his threats to rally social media followers to turn consumer boycotts on such woke companies. Starbuck has worked diligently to make diversity, equity, and inclusion corporate dirty words. The regression began with the pilgrimages of Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg and Amazon founder Jeff Bezos to kiss incoming President Donald Trump's ring. Both ponied up millions of dollars for his inauguration. Surplus funds from Trump's first inauguration remain unaccounted for. Changes in policy at Meta-owned Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and Threads are opening the door to unregulated anti-queer hate speech. Amazon has removed statements in support of LGBTQ rights from its policy pages.
At least so far, Apple is maintaining its diverse workplace programs and policies, although openly gay CEO Tim Cook has personally donated $1 million to the Trump inaugural. The boards of Apple and giant retailer Costco are urging shareholders to vote against anti-DEI resolutions submitted by the conservative think tank National Center for Public Policy Research. They argue that diversity programs are discriminatory and pose financial risks, according to The Advocate. The Costco resolution claims, with 310,000 employees, Costco likely has at least 200,000 employees who are potentially victims of this type of illegal discrimination because they are white, Asian, male, or straight. Accordingly, even if only a fraction of those employees were to file a suit, the cost to Costco could be tens of millions of dollars. Apple's board has advised a no vote ahead of their shareholders' annual meeting. The recommendation argues that the proposal inappropriately attempts to restrict Apple's ability to manage its own ordinary business operations. It also reaffirms Apple's commitment to being an equal opportunity employer, one that does not discriminate in recruiting, hiring, training, or promoting on any basis protected by law. The Costco annual shareholder meeting is scheduled for January 23rd, and Apple's convenes on February 25th. Shareholder-initiated resolutions are often non-binding and rarely succeed.
U.S. federal protections from bias in education based on sexual orientation or gender identity have been struck down by a federal court in Kentucky. U.S. District Judge Danny C. Reeves decided on January 9th that the Biden administration overstepped its authority with its interpretation of the law that bans discrimination based on sex. Reeves ruled that it was up to the lawmakers to delineate the protections under Title IX of the 1972 Education Amendments. Lawsuits initiated by the attorneys general of Republican-controlled states have stripped LGBTQ students of Title IX protections in more than half the United States. Reeves ruled specifically on the lawsuit filed by Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, and West Virginia. He also found that the inclusive interpretation violates free speech rights because it requires teachers and school administrators to use chosen names and pronouns consistent with the student's gender identity. Glad Sarah Kate Ellis was among queer advocacy group leaders to criticize the ruling. In her words, "All students deserve to be themselves and safe in school. Transgender and non-binary students are among the most bullied and harassed. Protections for the most vulnerable students make the entire school safer and stronger for everyone." The district court ruling will likely be appealed.
Finally, a bill that denies federal funding to schools that allow transgender students to compete in girls' and women's sports was passed by the U.S. House of Representatives. Texas Democrats Vicente Gonzalez and Henry Cuellar joined the thin Republican majority on January 16th. Gonzalez and Cuellar both have anti-trans legislative histories. Opponents charged that the ironically named Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act actually holds more dangers for girls and women, as described by Democratic Representative Suzanne Bonamici of Oregon.
"I rise today in strong opposition to the so-called Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act. This bill will empower child predators, putting students across the country at increased risk. This legislation would revoke all federal funding from schools that include transgender students on girls' and women's sports teams, and this is damaging and discriminatory to transgender students who benefit, as all students do, from participating in school sports, and also damaging to the entire school that's threatened because federal funding benefits all students. Keep in mind, colleagues, that as of last month, of the approximately 510,000 athletes who play at the NCAA level, 10 are transgender. Not 10,000, 10 out of 510,000.
Oregon Congressperson Suzanne Bonamici was joined by Vermont Representative Becca Ballant. Ballant co-chairs the Democratic LGBTQ caucus.
"Trans Americans are not the problem. This obsession with monitoring kids' genitals is absolutely the problem. Let's be clear. This is about kids. My kids, your kids, all kids, even elementary school kids playing basketball. I'm a mom of two teens. I'm a former teacher. I know what kids are going through in school. They're already self-conscious about their bodies. They just want to be on the soccer field with their friends. They certainly do not want to be humiliated by members of Congress. So come on, let's talk about what enforcement looks like, because you guys, you don't want to talk about it. We know. There is only one logical conclusion to this. This is interrogation of young girls about their bodies. This is asking people to show them what is underneath their underwear. So it's vile. It's twisted.
The gentlelady's time has expired.
It's not protecting anyone. It puts our children at risk. And actually, I urge colleagues on both sides
of the aisle. The gentlelady's time has expired.
To reject this government overreach. I yield back."
That was Vermont Representative Becca Ballant. Several queer advocacy groups are predictably members of the condemnation chorus. Allison Scott of the Campaign for Southern Equality urged the Senate to do the right thing here, refuse to exclude and marginalize children, and reject this legislation. The incoming Trump administration has vowed to eliminate any federal protections based on gender identity and to abolish all gender-affirming health care. It could essentially deny the existence of transgender and non-binary people. You could be next.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending January 18th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help us keep an ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Sarah Montague. Stay healthy.
And I'm Marcos Najera. Stay safe.
Hi, I'm Daryl Stevens, Noah in the Noah's Ark movie and TV series. And you've discovered This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities and those who love them.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
I have a dream.
The life of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is being honored this week. That dream King said was deeply rooted in the American dream is still frequently belied by the American reality. Nearly three decades after his indelible call for equality rang through the U.S. Capitol Mall, an award-winning documentary that revealed the lives of black gay men was still apparently too much for television. Writer-director Marlon Riggs talked about the controversy over Tongues Untied in 1990 by phone with This Way Out's Joey Flyer in Los Angeles and in studio with our Mike Alkale in San Francisco.
Homosexuality and combined with race, that is black homosexuality, is even in many ways a double or triple taboo. So yes, Tongues Untied has created this firestorm of controversy, not only from the right, and that's entirely predictable, but also from a number of so-called progressives, those people who run public broadcasting institutions and consider themselves enlightened, who have been very down on the work and, of course, as you know, refuse to show it.
Yes, why? Who?
Stations from Houston, Detroit, Tampa, Florida. In fact, two-thirds, as I understand it now, of public television stations in the United States did not show Tongues Untied when it was aired nationally as part of the Point of View POV series only a few weeks ago. And the reasons that were often offered was that the work was offensive to community standards. No one, of course, bothered to probe in too much detail what they meant by community and whose standards they were so-called protecting. And the other objection to Tongues Untied really centered on the language. Many stations claimed that the language was too obscene, too offensive. Even some claimed it was pornographic and therefore couldn't be broadcast. And of course, no one bothered to examine or understand how the language was used as a reference to the kinds of experiences and expression of the rage and torment that black gay men feel in the society. What I've seen often in the homophobic diatribes against Tongues Untied is a really singling out of me as if I am this one lone eccentric silly voice crying out for justice, and that there's not a community, in fact, that is demanding a reckoning, a demanding acknowledgement, and that in fact Tongues Untied itself is a collaboration of many artists of many different communities that are also making that demand. And knocking one of us down is not going to bludgeon all of us back into silence, into closets. We will continue to make our lives and our voices heard and known.
Black people, unfortunately, in general, do not discuss sexuality, do not raise the issue of sexuality or the issue of relations between men and women, let alone men and men and women and women, in any kind of real context. The most you will hear are jokes or sort of sly statements or witty sort of comic things said, but any kind of real discussion of sexuality is by and large absent in the Black community.
While the reasons for these attitudes are complex, Riggs says it's partially a defense against the white-held myth of Black hypersexuality, with the imaging of Blacks as hypersexual creatures. And when it comes to homosexuality, Riggs finds the church, with its long Bible Belt tradition, a potent force in keeping homophobia alive.
Abomination! It's an abomination! Mankind shall not lie with mankind, for it is an abomination!
Until the church, in some ways, becomes more progressive, more willing to talk, to acknowledge sexual diversity, to acknowledge sexuality per se, then it's going to be a tremendous obstacle in terms of dealing with crises of AIDS, teenage pregnancy, venereal disease, explosions of venereal disease infections within the Black community, and all kinds of problems that deal with sexuality in our community. It's a very simple kind of solution, and part of it is just for Black gay men, Black bisexual men, lesbians of color, lesbians in the general Black community to stand up and to acknowledge themselves, to affirm themselves. The problem is not only the oppression, if you will, by the church and other areas of leadership within the community, but it's also our complicity of silence.
That was the late Marlon Riggs, writer and director of the 1989 film Tongues Untied. It featured the late author activist Essex Hemphill.
The message that went out to us as Black gay artists and then to our communities, America, seemingly the America that's controlled or the America that's told what it can hear and what it can see, is not to know that Black gays and lesbians are visible. This is Essex Hemphill reminding you that you've tuned into This Way Out.
Homophobia, turn me around, keep on walking, keep on talking, marching on the free.
Free at last! Free at last! Thank God Almighty, we are free at last!
Martin Luther King's speech at the 1963 March on Washington may be the best-known sermon of all time, but it carried a liberating message that's not usually associated with sermons anymore. Lakaya is a spoken word consultant and public health cultural shapeshifter who's known for her series of Sermons I Wish I'd Heard. The poem Duck Walk to Freedom is an excerpt from one of them.
Is my laying burdens down. My picking up clocks dropped passing and masquerade masking truth within complex poetic metaphor. Little me choir boy, fearful of diaries impending betrayal if mama, daddy, brother, sister find it. Poetry is my confessional, my standing on ancestral refusal to hide behind color-coded bandanas, nail-painted pinky promises to no longer bear false witness without packing pews with proud, chosen families, embodying interdependence needed to relieve the dam, holding back all the tears we never cried, while we watch in full confidence that rainbows and the resulting waterfall indeed will show. Just in time to slow the grief, palm earth to feet, floating now in collective self-esteem. Poetry is my sing-songy sermon. My duck walk to freedom, dramatic dip to glow up, breastbound by a space beat, inviting prayer as prophetic involution, incepting the now of justice. To live up, glow up, bless up, vogue down Kochic aisles, flash mobbing scripture set to house music. The kingdom is nigh, the kingdom is nigh, we the kingdom are nigh. To lay our burdens down. Give up everything that has never served us as offering, worthy of altering the universe in our every soul until celebratory balls are all the church knows. And God saw that it was good. Say amen, somebody.
LaKaya joins us on This Way Out to talk about LaKaya's work and how you can participate, starting with the meaning of LaKaya.
I go just by my name, no pronouns, and that is because my name means home. And that wasn't the intended meaning for my name when my dad put letters together on a little sheet of yellow paper in the hospital waiting for me to arrive. However, in Haitian Creole, my name means home. And also in Isxhosa, in South Africa, my name means home. And it's wild, and I mention this because I named my business, a consulting space and a retreat space, Home Place, before I knew any of this. So I curate spaces for us to come back home to our self-healing power by transforming physical spaces and like office spaces, church classrooms, things like that, into spaces where we can do exactly that and for us to feel supported in the process. My hope is that in these spaces, people can experience what it feels like to heal outside of isolation, to be witnessed by other folks, to dare to be seen in the process of unraveling and also re-anchoring in our truth, in our true selves. The work that I do in the spaces that I curate, I feel like if they existed at a metaphoric intersection, it would be, you know, the liberation education that we get from Bell Hooks, may she rest in peace and power, and also the liberation arts, because that's how we creatively express ourselves into the world. Then we also have the liberation theology, the liberation spirituality, connecting us to everything, you know, bringing us back home to the connection. And I say that like kind of fusing two words together, kinship and connection. So K-I-N and connection. And then, and also being serious and real about the fact that for many of us, organized religion has been used to give up our authenticity, has incentivized that in so many ways, and has also found its home in our mainstream culture. And so that's the third. And then the fourth intersection would be liberation psychology, because this is where and how we move that fight, flight, freeze, fawn energy out of the body.
How did you come to turn that into the writing of sermons you wish you had heard?
I began officially writing it when I was teaching at UCLA. Students who signed up for the course became an ensemble, a theater troupe, and we would devise theater shows based on their real experiences around comprehensive sexual health education. And we would take that raw, honest storytelling and fuse it with humor. We would rewrite, you know, popular songs at the time with different lyrics. And then we would tour it to, at that time, the LAUSD high schools. I was hearing very often that who and what comes into the room when people are thinking about bodily autonomy or making decisions for themselves or individuating, you know, is religion. And Theater of the Oppressed is very much about rehearsal for the revolution. So we imagine theater as a green room for rehearsing, practicing different ways of being so that the unwanted life outcomes that our communities are experiencing can cease, right? So our kind of organizing tactics, strategies are based in how we can self-heal, how we can self-advocate, how we can identify the things that we can change and move on those things, but still very clearly committed to systems change. The first part of the piece just explores my life from that perspective growing up, how I knew that I was queer. So yeah, that's the first part of it. And then it turns into the impacts on mental health and how I try to pray to God to heal me, fix me. And when it wasn't happening, I got curious as to why. And so that kind of led me to a hermeneutical study of the Bible around what those clobber texts actually mean and learning God's heart through the original languages. And so then the second part of the piece is, you know, it comes after this moment where I feel like the world is telling me that it would be better off without me. And so I shift my costume and everything into the pastor, the preacher, giving the sermon that I wish little Kai heard growing up. And that would hopefully, I imagine, would have prevented me from getting to that place of not wanting to be here. And I pray will support others to not find themselves at that space.
What's the main tip you would give someone to do this kind of exercise of writing a sermon they wish they had heard?
I think there is sometimes a fear that if we are too truthful with ourselves, then somehow we'll get arrested in development. The truth is that we get arrested in development when we aren't real with ourselves and about what we've been through and what it takes to move through the thing. And so I guess my tip would be to be unapologetically authentic, transparent, and honest with yourself first.
LaKaya and This Way Out invite you to come up with your own sermon you wish you'd heard. You can check out the full version of LaKaya's sermon at thiswayout.org or follow LaKaya's link in bio on Instagram at LaKhiYia. Then share your own sermon with an Instagram reel tagged at LaKaya and at This Way Out Radio, or email it to info@thiswayout.org. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. NewsWrap was reported this week by Marcos Nahara and Sarah Montague and produced by Brian DeShazer. Lucia Chappell produced this week's features. The Steve Miller Band, Sweet Honey and the Rock, and LaKaya performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks John Beaupre of Los Angeles, California, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KOPN Columbia, Missouri, WRIR Richmond, Virginia, BridgeRadioPA.com Perth Andover, New Brunswick, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
Hey, we're All Black Era.
And you're listening to
CFRC Radio in Kingston, Canada.
Hey, what's up, guys? My name is May, aka DJ Mayhem, and I'll be hosting The Mood with May here on CFRC 101.9 FM every Wednesday from 11 until noon. Tune in weekly to hear me explore music and artists across genres and decades, curated around a different vibe or category each time. Whether you love finding new music just like me, or you want to switch it up a bit, I'll have plenty to offer. Follow me on Instagram at The Mood with May for updates and more information, or my show page on CFRC.ca.
Calling all AMS members, CFRC 101.9 FM is seeking a modest increase to its optional student fee for the first time in over a decade. Help your campus radio station serve our community with news, music, arts programming, podcasts, and more. Watch your emails for ballots from the AMS and vote yes for CFRC's fee increase on January 29th and 30th. Thank you for your support.
Broadcasting 24/7, 365, you're listening to 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca, Kingston's only campus community radio station. Tune in for the best local programming.
And welcome back. Good morning. It is 7:30 a.m. here in Kingston, Ontario. You are tuned into CFRC 101.9 FM, CFRC.ca. For those of you listening in through the web, we are located in the lower level of Carruthers Hall on the beautiful Queen's campus. My name is May, and you are now listening to What's Brewing. So this week is particularly exciting for me, and I know I say that every week, but truly I'm very excited that I have a good mix of genres here. I love a week where I can stray away from the confines of the traditional pop, rock, indie genres that seem so pervasive in the music scene now, which is great. Those are amazing genres, but I love to see something a little bit funky and a little bit fresh. So without further ado, the first one is by this group out of Montreal, Mego, with I'll Think of You Later. This is off of their most recent album, Eavesdropper, Death Stories, released January 22nd, so in and around the past week-ish or so. And like I said, Montreal-based, it's an atmospheric experimental group, and it's actually really unique because the title of the album is Eavesdropper, but thematically is also about eavesdropping. Like, a lot of the sounds on the tracks are samples over the past 4 years that they've been collecting and putting together. And I think it's really interesting because you get to see like a window into these little moments in their lives. And I think that really fits the theme that they were going for, obviously. But it's really cool and experimental to see somebody actually just putting found sounds into music. It's something that I find isn't very common in the music scene, at least in more mainstream areas anymore. So, and then after that, we have Backseat Driver and Dara Shindelka. I'm going to pronounce that wrong. Apologies. But this is their single, The Mountain, released on January 16th. This is a group out of Regina, Saskatchewan. Neo-soul and roots genres with powerful lyricism. They've been together since 2023, but this is their first studio recorded release. So I'm excited to see what else they have lined up, especially if they've been performing together as a band for a while. I'm sure it's just a matter of getting the studio time and the post-prod and everything. But without further ado, here is Mego with I'll Think of You Later, right here on What's Brewing, CFRC 101.9 FM.
Of you later, won't forget you. I'm tired of screaming. So tired I might scream.
Calm down.
Mama.
Chris
Welcome back. You just finished listening to Backseat Driver and Dara Shindelka with The Mountain. Before that, Mego with I'll Think of You Later. Coming up next, we have Brock Geiger and Sam Gendel with After Later, released as a single on January 14th. They're based out of Calgary, Alberta, and this is in anticipation of the first full-length album releasing on March 18th. It was also featured on the Rolling Stones Songs You Need to Know list. So if you enjoy this, come back for more in March. After that, I have a track recommended to me by one of our other DJs, Aaron. This is The Vanniers with Pigeons, released as a single on December 6th. This is a group out of Toronto, Ontario, formed in 2016, and they played a sold-out crowd at the Rivoli on January 25th. So I hope you enjoy and check out the rest of their discography if you enjoy. But without further ado, Brock Geiger and Sam Gendel with After Later.
Time might repeat itself if fate is still the demonstrator. Is it all too soon to tell if I be your after later? There is no surprise in how suddenly we become strangers. We can dream and there is no doubt. Grass is greener after later. Vanished like a wish to a well, just an echo in your chamber, reaching for what can't be held, like a vision or a vapor. Another night just as all slipping like a sinking anchor. And if the sky starts to fall, we'll know there's no after later. falling under a spell. But real love has no imitator. So I might forgive myself. Life's a giver and a taker. If the truth is too much to tell, pass me to the operator. Put the story back on the shelf. I won't be there after later. Another night just as all slipping like a sinking anchor. And if the sky starts to fall, we'll know there's no after later, after all.
Keeps a distance from another sea.
welcome back. You just heard from the Vanniers with Pigeon. Before that, Brock Geiger and Sam Gendel with After Hours. And at the very beginning of the episode, we had songs from Backseat Driver and Mego. This is What's Brewing, CFRC 101.9 FM. The last two tracks that I have in store for you are both from Toronto artists, and both were released on January 21st. So we're going to start things off with CeCe Arthur, Joseph Chabasson, Tom Gill, and Marcus Starling with Cartwheels for Coins. This is in anticipation of their album Way Through, releasing February 21st. And then after that, we have Intensive Care and The Body with At Death's Door, which is in anticipation of their album Was I Good Enough, releasing on March 14th. So without further ado, here is Cartwheels for Coins on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Yeah. morning, students. Question.
If Queens doesn't offer its workers a fair contract by February 3rd, who will be affected? Anyone? Answer. Those who live in residence, use university facilities, eat in campus cafeterias, and attend classes and labs.
So basically everyone.
Correct. It's time for Queens to take responsibility and ensure...